B-Pod Studios.
This is Talkin' Rock.
Talkin' Rock.
Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Yes, thank you so much, guy with the deep voice. It's Meltdown back at it again. Another fine episode of Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. And by the way, let me just throw this out there for you. If you're if you like the show and you like the episodes, give it a 5-star rating. Helps us move up in iTunes and Apple and all that kind of stuff. But more importantly, just follow. You don't even have to subscribe, although I would like it if you'd subscribe. But just follow the podcast. There's this thing that I discovered on the upper right-hand corner, and maybe you guys all know about this, but I'm old and I don't know, I don't get it sometimes. But you can just follow your favorite podcast, and when a new episode pops up, it kind of shows up right there in the front of your phone. So anyways, if you get a chance to follow, we've had some pretty kick-ass guests lately, including Scott Travis from Judas Priest and Nico McBrain from Iron Maiden just last week. So some legendary skin bashers right there. Hey, John Crabbe is my guest today, of course. I was one of the guys that saw him with the Scream back in the early 1990s, which, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, I think I talked to Scott Travis about that, and he was actually in the Scream there for a short time before joining Judas Priest. Anyhow, that's from last week's podcast. Today we talk about the new single that John's got out. We talk about his love of the Beatles and that Rick Rubin Beatles 1-2-3 documentary, which is on Hulu, which is awesome. And plus, I wanted to ask him about working with Bob Rock, because it's one of those things where Metallica has their podcast out right now, and they're talking about, I think it's an 8-episode series, they're talking about the Black Record, 30th anniversary of the Black Record. And Bob Rock came in and did the Black Record, which, of course, you know, as we all know, 30 years later, just, you know, changed everything for Metallica. But the guys from Metallica were real, like, they didn't want to work with Bob Rock. They're like, we know Metallica better than this guy does. Well, they listened to what Bob said, and of course, the rest is history. So I'll ask John about talking with working with Bob coming up here in just a bit. In the meantime, I did mention my socials. You can follow me at MeltdownWRIF on Twitter and Facebook, just like John Crabbe does. I had to thank him for following me on the socials.
Listen, dude, I want to know what's going on in the world. I you know what I mean? I get up there quite a bit, you know, to do shows and stuff. And you guys have always been, you guys, I mean, God, from the Scream, like the Riff. And I'm not going to bring it up, you know, the other station in Detroit back in the day. You guys have always been massively supportive of pretty much everything that I did. So, why not?
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I came here in 1995, and I don't even know if you remember this because it was another lifetime ago, but I actually saw you play with the Scream in Buffalo, and that's where I met you. And I talked about this with you before too, but for those that don't know, I did an interview with you and Nikki one time backstage at the outdoor shed in Buffalo, and Nikki kept swearing off the side of the mic. Do you remember that?
You know what? That doesn't surprise me, dude. Because like, those guys, and it amazes me to this day. Like, I sit there and I laugh and I go, they would do stuff intentionally just to make people cringe.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what I mean? Getting for, like, there was a station that we did, Tommy and I did in Dallas, and they said, it's a live broadcast. Okay, great. No worries. Blah, blah, blah. And I've never heard more F-bombs dropped. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm sitting there. I'm the new kid on the block. I'm going, well, are we supposed to be doing this? Or, well, apparently they know. They've been doing it their whole lives, and people are still buying their tickets. So it was just crazy to me.
Well, it's so funny because that story turned into a picture that I always wanted in my career, and that was a picture with Kiss with their full makeup on. So what happened was, so for those who don't know, I'm interviewing you and Nikki, and whenever I'm talking to you, Nikki is off the microphone, and he's just dropping F-bombs. He's like, there must be a chicken around here somewhere. Anyways, fast forward about 8 years later, and I'm at a Linkin Park show, and this tour manager comes up to me, and I can't remember his name, and he goes, hey, you're the guy from Buffalo that Nikki kept dropping F-bombs with. And I'm like, yeah. Fast forward to 2009, I see the same guy at a KISS show. It just so happens our photographer is doing the meet and greet with KISS, the pictures, and he says, hey, Meltdown, come on, we're going to get our pictures taken with KISS, and like 2 minutes later, I'm standing in front of KISS with our makeup on. So that story got me a picture with KISS like 20 years later.
Well, you know, anything I can do to help, buddy.
All right, well, let's help you out here with this new single right now, John. What's that?
I said it was a long turn coming, but I eventually helped out a pal.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. So, anyways, yeah, for the Days of the Scream to a picture with KISS, but here we are now, and this new single drops. Let me see here if I can. It's so beautiful, of course, but Cosi Bella, is that how you pronounce it?
Cosi Bella.
Okay. So this song, obviously, you know, you have a lot of classic roots and stuff. And when I hear this song, you know, I know that you mentioned, you know, Penny Lane and stuff in past interviews and whatnot. Like this kind of reminds me of like the Beatles meets like Mott the Hoople and all that kind of stuff. There's kind of all your influences rolled into the song.
You know what? It's funny. Like so far, it's been a positive response, but they're like, wow, it's not what I would have expected from you. But I have always said from day one, people go, who's your favorite bands? Top three, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Aerosmith. So, you know, and then obviously, I was one of those rare birds that got to see Queen, the original lineup, 4 or 5 times back in the day. So I was a massive fan of Queen as well. And so when I wrote this song, it's like, you know, when you write music, you draw from different things. Like you hear things, like it could be so random, but you hear things. And so when you're talking to the producer, I brought the idea in to Marty and he said, oh yeah, that's cool. Cool melody. What are you hearing? That's the first thing most people ask. What are you hearing? Oh, I don't know, maybe something in the lines of, and then you give them an idea. And then they go, bing, light bulb goes off, everybody runs with it. And my thing was, I've always been, for as long as I can remember, fascinated with the song Penny Lane by the Beatles. I think the bass work in it is insane, the melody, like, just everything. And then the same with Killer Queen was the song that actually turned me on to Queen. And to this day, if I hear it, the volume goes up, and I just love that. So when I wrote this, that was the two songs that I said to Marty Fredrickson. The funny thing is everybody hears something different. I've heard, oh, yeah, reminds me of the Beatles meets Chicago, Saturday in the Park. It reminds me of Queen meets Billy Joel, you know, and I'm like, okay. One guy said, it's like the Beatles with Dan McCaffrey from Nazareth singing. And I'm like, you know, that's the beauty of music, you know. Get out of it what you want, you know. But I just really went into the dish, and I call it the dish, the Rolodex in my head. And I just started, you know, like I just start hearing things. I mean, I got a song right now. It's like total jazz chords. It's you know, I don't know what it's going to sound like when it's done, but I'm hearing like these kind of crazy guitar chords with some percussion on it and some horns. And somebody goes, oh, what are you hearing? And I'm like, I don't know, man, kind of Sergio Mendez in Brazil 66. If anybody remembers that band.
No, I don't.
But that's my mom had this crazy record collection with everything from Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett all the way down to like KISS and Led Zeppelin and Grand Funk Railroad. And I mean, she was the one that really kind of turned me on to the 45 of Dream On. So her record collection was just, I mean, she had thousands of records. And so I've got all that shit. Pardon me.
Oh, you're good. No, you're fine.
I have all that music stored back here, you know. But I love Glenn Campbell. Love, you know, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, you know, So I'm all over the map.
So where's your mom's record collection now?
You know, like a dummy, my mom passed away in 95. And I just was like, oh, I don't want the records. You keep them. And, you know, my sisters and brothers were just like giving them to people. I mean, my mom was in, remember back in the day, I don't know if your parents were, had this or not. My mom was in that like Sony record club or Columbia house. You know, for one penny, you get 13 records. And then, you know, they basically build a profile and they send you stuff that they think you like. You know, and my mom had like this massive record collection. So when she passed away, 95, dude, it was CDs.
Right.
I'm like, I ain't lugging all those back to California. You keep them. Now I would literally saw off my arms to get that record collection again. But
now, did she get to watch you play in Motley?
No, she saw me with the Scream. But unfortunately, she got sick while I was in the Scream, you know, diagnosed with cancer and whatever. So she was never able to really see me with the guys.
Yeah, I was in the same boat. My mom passed away from cancer in 1992, so right around the time that I probably saw you guys first. But, hey, you mentioned that you have some of these songs. So I know that you're kind of releasing a song here and a song there. How many songs do you have that are like, completed?
A bunch. I don't know the number. I've got a bunch of stuff that I wrote with Marty. I got some things I wrote on my own. I got some stuff that I wrote with this buddy of mine, D.A. Carcos, who actually appeared on the my Unplugged record with me. And then I wrote even some stuff with Richard Fortus from Guns N' Roses.
Wow.
So I've got a bunch of stuff that's, you know, a bunch recorded already and a bunch I still have to record. I was just showing my wife the other day, like, I'll take a riff or a chord progression and I go, oh, that's kind of cool. And I just record it and put it on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was just showing my wife the other day. I'm like, man, I got like 66 ideas on this thing. I got that. So the plan is, again, you know how it is. I don't know how long you've been doing the radio thing, but you can obviously, you know, you've been doing it a while, so you can see the difference in how things work now to the thing to like from when I started, you know what I mean?
Right.
Record deals or it, like all everything's different. So a guy like me, there's a handful of stations that I may or may not get on. Most radio stations aren't going to touch me with a 10-foot pole. There is no MTV anymore. Most of your Tower Records, Sam Goody's, they're all gone. There's a few mom and pop stores. And then the other stores like Best Buy, Kmart, Walmart, the records that they do carry are only for, give or take, they're only the top 20 on Billboard.
Right, right.
So there's really, it's kind of a guessing game at this point. So Marty sat, he was kind of the catalyst for me doing it this way. He goes, here's what you do. Scrap the record, do one song, one video, let it sit for 2 months. Do another song, another video, let it sit for 2 months. You know, maybe if you want, do a cover in between here and there. Just throw stuff out, content. Keep loading people up with music. And then he said, once you get 4, 5, 6 songs, then do your vinyl and your CDs, and he goes, you can sell that same place everywhere every other band sells it, Amazon, on your website, and at your shows. That's it. That's what it's come down to. So I'm just trying to figure my way around this, like I said earlier, the digital world. You know, I'm just trying to figure out where's my little corner or slice of the pie digital world. And we'll see.
Yeah, it's so funny you mention that because when I leave work today on my Harley Davidson, I'm driving by the record store. I got some records I have to pick up. And, you know, I had to have my bags. I had the stretch bags on there because they're easier to put records in. So there's a little pro tip for you there.
Well, but now let me ask you this, though. You're in Detroit or?
Yeah.
Okay, so how many record stores do you know of in Detroit where you can go get, hypothetically speaking, the new Motley Crue record or the new LA Guns record or the new Dead Daisies record? Do you know what I mean? There's not a lot of them left.
No, there's not a lot, and for sure you can order them online like that. But, you know, whenever I go down in Nashville, I always stop at Black Shag Vinyl. I always got a Black Shag Vintage. I got to stop down there.
Yeah, that Tommy, right?
Yeah, Tommy Daly. Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, Tommy actually played guitar on my Live 94 record.
No kidding.
yeah, he's a good dude. I love that guy. But
speaking of guitar, yeah, I wanted to ask you about this. I've never met or interviewed or even, you know, had any kind of anything with Richard Fortus, and that guy is so good. So what's it like working with him?
He's definitely a rare bird, dude. Like, Richard is so underrated. I met him when I joined the Daisies. I knew who he was, but I had never met him before. And then after working with him for a couple of years, that guy is truly one of those guys that could sit down and play anything. You could put him in any situation, and he's done it. Like, he actually played with God, who's the girl, the black girl from Jamaica, Rihanna.
Okay.
Richard actually toured with Rihanna as her guitar player.
Wow.
He was actually in, there was another, like, he's into everything, though, like The Cure. You want to sit down and watch somebody play guitar like Glenn Campbell? He can play country. He can play R&B. He can play progressive. Apparently his father was, I don't know if you remember, there was a company called St. Louis Music. They used to own like Ampeg amps and all this other stuff. So his dad was involved with St. Louis Music for years. So I think Richard was telling me the story when he was like 10 or 11 years old, he was playing guitar and he literally got to stand and sit in like Missouri somewhere. He literally got to walk on stage and play guitar with, like for a sound check, he played with Yes.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah. So that dude is he's probably one of the most well-versed rounded guitar players I've ever met in my life. The guy can play anything.
Yeah, he is so good. You know, GNR just played here, you know, and obviously Slash is Slash, but Richard, man, he is just so good. But
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You mentioned something a few minutes ago about Penny Lane and about the bass playing on that and whatnot. Have you watched the Rick Rubin thing, the Beatles 1-2-3?
Of course.
I mean, how incredible was that?
Dude, like, just hearing, like, I love that kind of stuff. Like, there's another thing too, like the way they broke down from a producer's point of view, how Rick Rubin broke everything down, and he talked about bass parts and guitar parts and how that part worked with this part. And I've had the really good fortune of working with some unbelievable producers throughout my career. So I got like little tidbits like that from Eddie Kramer and, you know, Bob Rock. But I love those kind of things where they really go in and they tear down like they break everything down. And one of the other ones you got to check out if you're into that stuff is they do these classic album rewind, the making of kind of deal. There's one on Deep Purple Machine Head, which is brilliant. Dark Side of the Moon, insane. And then there's the other one that I saw that I was just, my mouth was open the whole time, was the making of A Night at the Opera by Queen. And they literally go through one song at a time through the whole record. And it's freaking genius. It's unbelievable.
I think when Sgt. Pepper's had their 50th anniversary, they did something on PBS, a whole series on just that record. Of course, that record was recorded, I think, on four tracks or something ridiculous like that.
It was, if memory serves me correctly, it was eight tracks.
Okay.
But if you think about it now, like, I mean, you know, then we, you know, we're doing 24 tracks. When Motley, back in 92, when we did Misunderstood, we had a 53-piece orchestra. So we were running, like, they're called Studer machines, the old tape machines. We had, like, four of those things going. And that was a nightmare to mix. But now it's crazy. Like, I got Pro Tools on a laptop. So that's what I recorded Casabella with. I recorded it on a laptop in my bedroom. And I'm just sitting here blown away, like, as an old-school guy, I'm just sitting here going, I can literally record, depending on the power of the computer, I can record 256 tracks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's night and day. But that's the thing that amazes me about these older guys like the Beatles and the Pink Floyds. And they did all of that stuff with a limited amount of tracks and effects. You know, I'm just like, oh my God, like even the Queen thing, there's a section in there. I think it's called Seaside Rendezvous on the Night at the Opera album. And there's a tap dancing part in there. And, you know, it breaks down and it's like somebody you think is tap dancing. And they were talking to Roy Thomas Baker and then the drummer Roger Taylor, and he's like, yeah, you know, we wanted to do this little tap dancing part, so we got a metal plate, they set it on the control board, and he said him and Freddie took metal thimbles and put them on their fingers and mic'd the plate. So they get somebody tap dancing and it's just them tapping their fingers on this metal plate. I'm like, how genius is that? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
We're kids nowadays, even myself to a degree, we're spoiled a little bit. We've got it easy. Those guys, they were on a whole other level of genius.
Yeah, that's an unreal story. Yeah, it's like, you know, with Steven Tyler using the salt shakers or whatever for the, you know, in Sweet Emotion. The sugar packets. Yeah, it's Hey, so this song, by the way, I mean, obviously, you know, I've never really written a song, but I'm assuming that some of the songs that you write are autobiographical or something. Is this song about anybody, your current single?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of about the one that got away. And, you know, regardless of whether she bailed, you bailed, whatever. It's about the one that got away. And it's kind of autobiographical, but not really. I think any man or woman, you know, when you're on your deathbed, you can sit there and go, God, you know, there was that one girl. Maybe it was a girl in school when you were in third grade that you just had the biggest crush on and you just couldn't bring yourself to go over and share your peanut butter and jelly sandwich with her. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then that picture's like, it's got like this Almost Famous kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that came about really kind of on accident. So the girl that's in the video, I don't know. Have you seen the video yet?
Yeah.
Okay, so my friend Michelle owns a clothing store called Rockin' Boho. It's like an online store. And So I was telling her, I said, hey, you know, we're going to do this video. I need to find a girl that's like, you know, cute. I go, I don't want to do that waify supermodel thing. I want a girl that's just like naturally a good looking girl, but whatever. So she goes, I got it. And she introduced me to this girl named Jenna Hardwick. And when Jenna sat down, I'm sitting there and I looked at her and I go, holy crap. Like, it's uncanny how much she looks like Kate Hudson.
Yeah.
So then I started thinking about it, like, you know, and then so Michelle showed me a few other ads that she had done. And I was like, oh, my God, this girl looks so much like Kate Hudson. It's ridiculous. So then I started thinking, like, even in that movie, if you really think about the movie, Almost Famous, she had a thing for that guitar player, and the guitar player couldn't get his head out of his ass.
He
just kind of played her the whole movie, and then at the end, she goes left, he goes right, and, you know, whatever. But at the end of the movie, he finally comes around and realizes that she was pretty awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with the lyrics being the way that they were and the girl looking the way that she did, I just said, just out of curiosity, I just said to Jenna, I go, can I take a photo of you with these sunglasses on? And so we did a close up of her face. And then, you know, like if you really look at the Almost Famous thing, it says Almost Famous and needs glasses, but the band is in, like, there's a reflection of the band in the lenses. So I just had my guy that helped me do the video edit. I said, all right, here's this picture. Here's the original thing. I said, I want you to do Cassie Bella in each lens. And I said, find a photo of me on stage and do a reflection in the lenses. And he went, okay. And we did it. And we put them side by side and we were just laughing our ass off. We're like, this is great. I've had a few comments like, oh, he ripped off the thing. I go, it wasn't like I did it intentionally, but I just couldn't help. I mean, the story in the movie was very similar to what I was saying in the song. And the girl just, you know, randomly, I mean, it was, again, it's insane how much in the face she looks like Kate Hudson. So
yeah.
I just said, let's have some fun with it.
No, she does for sure. So, no, that's cool. It's a great video. And, hey, a couple more things here for you, John, before we cut you loose here. I just want to ask you, you just mentioned producers, and I'm listening to this Metallica podcast right now. We're talking about the Black Record and Bob Rock and stuff. And I had to ask you, what was it like working with Bob Rock?
The guy's a genius. You know, he's got this way of pushing your buttons. Very musical. We gave him all of our demo tapes before we went up there, and Bob knew, like, he was hearing in his head exactly what the record sounded like when it came out. Like, he was like, okay, Crab, you're going to do that guitar, do your guitar part, but I want you to use this amp, and I want you to put the gain all the way down on this one, but I want you to also use this amp at the same time and turn the gain up on that. And it was like, he just knew everything. He mapped it out. Also helped us develop the songs and arrange them, make sure they had the most impact. And, but he's got this way of pushing you where, like, I would do like a vocal take and I would go, okay, man, I think that's it. That's good, dude. And he would just hit the button, and he would go, you like it? And I go, yeah, man, I'm good with that. He goes, okay, if you say so, we put that on the record. And I'm like, I would sit there and go, wait, what? Okay, you know what? Roll it one more time. You know what I mean? But he just had this way of just like pushing your buttons to make you give him just that little more. And it was something simple like, okay, if you say so, that's good for the record. And it would just piss you off enough to go, all right, let's do this again. And watch. And then you would get just angry enough where you'd go in there and just tear it up. He did it to Tommy, did it to Nikki, did it to Mick, and it worked.
And so how many songs were left over? You said you sent him a bunch of demos. How many songs did you send him, and how many songs were left over at the end?
There was a few. I think we, to one degree, you know, we used pretty much. There was a few things that we didn't. We had a song called Dancing in the Hole. We had another one called Ditch the Bitch. There was a few.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny because even that Quaternary record, there was songs like 10,000 Miles, Baby Kills, Living in the Know. We recorded all of those in the same sessions. But after we sat down and we looked at the whole record as a whole, we're like, all right, these work together. Those, let's work on those later. And then we wound up doing that mail order Quaternary thing. And we just kind of gave the fans those extra songs. If they just, basically, when they got the record, it came with a throw bounce back card, fill it out, send it to the label, and they sent you another record.
Yeah, it was so interesting to listen to the guys from Metallica talk about working with Bob, because one of the reasons they brought him on was because of the Dr. Feelgood record, that they thought that he, you know, made this thunderous album, and of course some other ones in the past with Bon Jovi and different things. But I mean, obviously that Motley record is just like so good, and sonically it's just, you know, it's bombastic, and he really brought a lot of stuff out of you, eh?
Yeah, he knew what he was doing, man, and he's got a very odd technique of doing stuff. You know, even Tommy's drums, like when we did the drums, everything was mic'd, the room was mic'd. But then what he did was he ran, I don't know how they do it technically, but there was a loading dock for, you know, tractor trailers, all cement, metal. And Bob ran a PA out to the loading dock. So everything Tommy was doing was going to the board, but it was also going out to the loading dock, which was then mic'd, and then that went to the board. So you got that really killer, reverby, huge, echoey sound. And, you know, so he's got a method, and it was awesome, you know. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. You're going to say but?
No, it's weird, like, not just the Metallica record or Feel Good. I mean, the Cult stuff that he did.
Oh, yeah.
And even back, I mean, he engineered a lot. He engineered for Bruce Fairburn on some of that Permanent Vacation, Aerosmith, and the Electric Boys, Lips and Hips. That was all Bob Rock. You know what I mean? So he's definitely got an ear for tones.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. That record, like I said, is just so good. And, and final thing here for you, and we'll cut you loose here. I know that you're working on a book, and you're probably going to have a lot of stories about, you know, some of the stuff we were talking about. And I think I heard you say it's Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, which is kind of a clever name for the book. But what can you tell us about that?
It's basically it's an autobiography. It goes from all the way back to. It tells a little bit about, obviously, me being born, but it talks about my parents. My grandparents were first-generation Italians from the Calabria section of Italy. My mother's side of the family, I talk about them. It talks about me being born, my childhood being, you know, very kind of wonder years, like, you know, whatever. And then just completely derailing and falling apart, and it goes into everything. There's a lot of things that fans don't know about me, some of my marriages, talks about, again, my youth, childhood. I dive into the Uncle Jack stories, you know, and then just the, you know, but basically the book is really kind of a testament to, I knew at a very young age that I wanted to do what I'm doing for a living. Now, has it panned out the way that the magazines, the articles, you know, Learjets, limousines, and all that other stuff? Probably not. But I'm still pushing forward, still trying to find my slice of the pie, as I said. But it's really kind of a testament to perseverance. Do you know what I mean? And it goes right up to from time I took my first breath to, you know, maybe a year ago.
Mm. Well, you're definitely a survivor, and you've got some great stories to tell for sure.
Now, if I could just join the band Survivor, I would. That would be a clean sweep. I think I would have played with every band on Earth. That was the last and final band, now that you bring it up.
That's the dude that did all those commercials for the Bud Light. Do you remember the Real Men of Genius? He sang all those.
Yeah, I need one of those, buddy.
I hear you. We both do. Well, John, thanks so much for the time, man. Good luck with the single, and can't wait to check out the book, of course. That's going to be dropping next year, you think?
I'm pretty sure it's done. I'm actually getting ready next week to fly to L.A. to do the audiobook. And so it's done. They were looking at a release of the first quarter next year. But they may or may not, I'm still not totally sure, but they were talking about possibly doing advanced, like, pre-orders for it at the end of this year. So we'll see. I don't know. But it's definitely going to be out early next year.
Well, cool. Well, thanks so much for the time, and good luck with everything. And we'll see you next time you're up here in the Motor City, or maybe in Nashville. If you hang tight for a second here, I'll be in Nashville next month. I'll tell you about that in a second, okay?
Awesome, buddy.
How cool is that? John Corabi on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Always great to talk to. As a matter of fact, talked to him for quite a while off the air as well. So good to hear Crab, as they call him. Anyways, like I said before, you can follow me on my socials at MeltdownWRIF. Hope you guys liked this episode. If you did, 5 stars and all that kind of stuff, that would be appreciated as well. You know, I started the podcast off with the big guy with the big voice. His name is Pete, by the way, from San Diego. Super good dude. So I thought I would finish. Well, I do every episode. I finish with the guy with the big voice, and we ride off into the sunset. Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.